These are the recollections of Turner Ashby, memories of the years when the oceans rose and the several states were separated asunder. Chapter 9. I do not believe I have mentioned that my mother was a librarian. If I have not, I have been highly remiss. It's an important piece of information about myself, about my family. Her chosen profession was of great influence on my life. There were always books, far too many books, in our house there on Oakland Street. Books stacked on the porch, on the stairs, books in the kitchen, the pantry, in the closets, even books sometimes on the shelves themselves. My mother had been a librarian for forever, or at least as long as I could remember. She first served at Stonewall Jackson Elementary School, where I was interned as a student, and she served as administrator in the city public system. There was nothing more important than a public library in her mind. Her mother, my maternal grandma, was of the page-turning profession as well. Reading, or at least hoarding books, was in my blood. Like many librarians, my mother was of two minds, two philosophies about her duties. First of all, she never turned down a challenge, never. When asked, she either knew the answer outright, or if she did not know the answer or the quote, she would find it and deliver back. She just could not help herself. She was a reference librarian. She could not help but go in search of every answer to every question. Unfortunately, this was sadly participatory. If someone, perhaps a worthless son, asked my mother a question, I can't remember an instance when she said anything but look it up. This was always, always a problem for a lazy child. How old was Washington when he got his wooden teeth? Look it up. When the charge of the Light Brigade charged, on what continent did they charge? Look that up, too. How do you spell sherbet? I always thought the ice cream was spelled like Schubert, like the composer. I had a horrible time in school. I could not spell my way out of a paper bag. But I digress. The other half of my mother's librarian philosophical creed was that she was a defender of books, all books. It did not matter. It could have been the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, or the worst dime store romantic tripe ever put on paper. Still, she would protect that book. Never ever saw her throw a book away, no matter how damaged, or dangerous, or useless. She'd protect that book and most likely search for a reader for it. She was a hoarder, or keeper, with a firm and grounded belief that a book would be better off and serve more noble purpose under her oversight, guidance, and gentle care than anyone else's. To her, books were like puppies, to be protected, to be petted, and let out now and then under the benevolent and watchful eye. Hence the quaint saying, dog-eared. That's a joke. Minor joke. Now, my mother was of the Y2K generation, and she had flirted with the digital, but she found it wanting. The digital, the e-books, the online subscriptions that one could load into the chips in their heads, they were all wanting in her mind. They had no heft. To my mother, a book had to have a weight, to have a worth. And she never wavered from that belief, never. When the rising waters of the ocean forced the James River over its banks, my mother was ready. She had a plan to save her books. So it was my mother that I thought of when Lays and I entered tunnel entrance number USLOC 1445. As soon as the door, or the hatch, or whatever it was closed, I smelled books. The dusty, just on the edge of mildew scent of old volumes. Smells like your house, Turner, Lays said, and she sneezed. We had stumbled, or more appropriately, been sitting upon all winter, a storage facility of the old United States Library of Congress. Of course, we knew, and everybody knew, that that section of Shenandoah Mountains was honeycombed with tunnels, storage tunnels, hideaways for various multinational corporate officials, and even deeper bunkers for various vice presidents and heads of covert departments of this and that. And then there were the missile silos and backup systems. Oh, the U.S. government, they love their tunnels. But I had just figured all those hidey holes had been abandoned long ago, along with the very idea of the government itself. This apparently was not the case. "What are you all doing down here?" Lays asked. "Well, that's classified," the rather tipsy librarian who had just dragged us into the tunnel said. My mother would have been aghast. She would not have minded about the drinking. Everybody had a drink now and then, my mother, my father. But the spilling of a beverage on a book was a sin of biblical proportions in her mind. "Top secret for whom?" Lays asked, correctly using the preposition whom. "This facility is for special intelligence," the man said.
"Special intelligence," Lays mulled. "Now what do you mean, special? Do you mean like more intelligent than the average intelligence? Or perhaps this intelligence is one that you just happen to prefer over the other intelligent, making it special? Or maybe, just maybe, this intelligence of yours is just simply askew, not special. Could that be the case? Which one is it?"
Now, Lays had a devious way, a devilish way, a flitty-flirty way of asking questions to those being asked that was so artfully muddled and confused that the general subject of the question at hand made the person being questioned end up by saying a lot more than they thought they were, because they were completely twisted around about whatever question they thought they were answering. I can't express that idea any clearer. "This is a branch of the Central Intelligence Agency," he said.
"I thought the CIA was dead," Lays said, "along with the rest of the government."
"They kept the CIA," he said. "They just went underground." "In the most literal way," I said, trying to interject some levity.
"Then what's with all these books?" Lays asked.
"Because there were books just piled up and spilled every which way, right inside that door and all along the corridor, with just enough room for a single person to elbow themselves by." "The books are for informational verification," the man said, like he assumed everybody should know what that meant.
"Fiction or non-fiction?" Lays asked.
"Non-fiction, of course. What could you possibly verify with a novel?" the man smugly asked.
"Well, I imagine there are those who would say you could verify the true nature of human condition with a good book. Not that I read one lately."
"That's not our purpose here. We need facts."
"Well, obviously," Lays said. "Everybody needs facts, but what are these facts for?" "Oh, the cloud,"
Lays answered her own question.
"You want to fix the cloud."
"Can't fix it until we know what's wrong with it."
"So you need hard copies, all these old books,"
Lays said with kind of a winsome look about her. She'd not say, but she'd love her books just as much as the rest of us.
"You're going to have some tedious nights around here, though."
"That's okay. They left her with plenty of provisions." The man couldn't help but pat his belly.
"Did the pulse go off? Was there an electrical burst, or was it radiation?"
Two people, one large woman with a uniform on, the other small bandy man, maybe about 25, came climbing up a metal clanking ladder out of the shadows beneath us. This space we was in was not a large space, but like a corrugated steel foyer, a low-ceilinged entryway before you dropped into the cave proper.
"Well?"
they both asked.
"I'm not sure," the drunk replied.
"What do you mean you're not sure? What is it? We heard it. It was loud. We could see the flash in here. It must have been blinding out there. Are you kidding? What was it? How big did it register?"
They didn't breathe. They kept talking.
"We know we weren't the primary target. I don't think Baltimore was either. But that doesn't mean we weren't a target. Who knows how many more they have? God damn North Carolina anyway. How they know that we were here? How bad is it out there?"
"I don't know," the drunk said.
"Well, what did the meters say?"
"I don't know. I left them out there."
What do you mean you left him out there? How are we going to read him if you left him out there? How are we going to know if we're safe?
And they stared. Tyler, you're drunk and you stink. Well, at least you didn't need a meter to find that observation.
It's not my fault, our quickly sobering Tyler said. I had to have something. If I was going out there, I had to have something to keep me calm. And then I found these two.
He pointed to me and Lays.
Who are they?
The big woman, the bandy guy, both folded their arms like something was our fault.
You know who they are. We've been watching them all winter. I couldn't just leave them out there. But you left the EMT meters and the Geiger counter out there, didn't you? How are we going to know what's going on? Somebody's just going to have to go out there.
Why me? What did I do? The now completely sober Tyler whined in a very unmilitary, even spy-like manner. These three did not seem like the hardened CIA operatives one is reminded of in the movies.
Lays whistled.
She could do that shrill whistle with her pinkies and teeth like calling dog. I hated that whistle. Makes me cringe even to think about it. But that whistle did get everybody's attention.
Why don't you just hook up to the data with your chip? Lays asked.
They looked at Lays like she was crazy. Lays didn't like that.
Our chips are disabled, big woman said. Why on earth would you do that?
Because that's what we were ordered to do. We can't have any digital interference in here.
I thought everything had digital interference in it, I said.
Not here, the bandy man said. And here's the short explanation what they're talking about, because I don't feel like telling you a long explanation or telling you how I found out or how I fit the pieces together over a number of years. You may have come across my book on the subject, entitled The Mass Illusion, A Half Century of Digital Fabrication and Madness. That's a long explanation. You can read it if you find a copy. It seemed to hit a chord in the population when it came out because everybody had a chip in their head. That's the way they watched their movies and read the paper. How they checked the sports scores and posted pictures of all her friends. A chip had become most people's main connection to the world. Then, as I've mentioned before, the cloudburst virus came in many forms over many years and shuffled data and dates, census records and tax rolls. My favorite chapter, and I suppose I can have a favorite chapter in my own book, was entitled Jesus Was Born on a Monday. That chapter dealt with the cloudburst digital reinvention of the calendar. My main point here is that if you had a chip in your head, and everybody had a chip in their head, you couldn't trust nothing. Most people didn't know not to trust anything. They just accepted whatever came in their heads, we always did. The cloudburst virus snuck up on us, twisting a little information here, then a little more information there. A lot of people believe the first wave of data shuffling was February 22nd, 2022. 2-22-22. All those twos. But you can't be sure. I believe it started earlier. But we may never know. So what's this got to do with a high security hole inside of a mountain? Well, apparently, the CIA was attempting, when we found them, to develop a program to match up the shuffling data with God's honest truth, or at least what was in books, hard copies. So this little band of folks Lays and I had run into were meticulously and tenaciously and tediously matching up printouts of birth records, etc., with the many volumes of histories, etc., from the Library of Congress.
CIA hadn't always dealt exclusively with the truth. It's kind of new territory for us, said the bandy man.
Now, his name was Bill Ryder. Lays came to call him Billy. They became close. They stood close. They ate meals side by side in the mess hall, three levels down. Lays asked him for advice and batted her schoolgirl eyes at him. I could not stand that man. but I got ahead of myself once again.
I can find out what your senses say, if you want, Lay said.
We all nodded.
Do you need a passcode?
The big woman asked.
No, not particularly, Lay said.
Then she went out the door and came back in a moment with the instruments.
There you are. May I ask you one thing, Lay said. By all means. You got anything to eat that ain't beans?
Now next time I'll tell you what the meter's told us. And I'll tell you what it sounds like when the lightning strikes and the lights go out. You must learn to read your favorite book in the dark. Turner Ashby.